Les colloques du Collège de France.
Adli, led us on a sort of biblical territory this morning. I will start with a citation from what is for all of us working on patent data as economic indicator of a sort of Bible. This paper by Zvi in the JEL 1990, who said, I think patent statistics are interesting in spite of all the difficulties that arise in their interpretation. We should not be cursing the darkness, but rather we should keep on lighting candles. So that's what I'm going to try to do in the coming minutes, lighting some candles. Around this this question that figure in the title about the connections between science and technology. In fact, this work is part of a broader project that aims at mapping the impact of science on technology. But what I'm going to present is the methodological component of this project. As in this project, we sort of promised to use two type of indicators, NPL, so non-patent literature, citations of non-patent literature in patents on the one hand, and NLP on the other hand. Just to clarify, I think what I mean here by NLP is so semantic, and I would say the hard or the most recent sense. So it's not taking sort of bigrams or whatever, extracting words from the text. It's really about sort of calculating what so-called embedding, vectorizing text. It is a sort of technique used for ChatGPT and all the modern versions of AI. Not only Gen AI, but all types of AI now use a way or another this sort of embedding approach. So the point of this work is to compare an established, say, way of doing things, an established source of data, which are citations, with a new emerging one, which is embedding this NLP. Then this work is really about evaluating a new research tool, and I would say that if we reach a clear conclusion, that will tell you whether you should pivot or not to this new territory, as it is really very different techniques from the one that we are accustomed to using, as we will see. And it might have many applications that I will look at in more detail at the end. Okay, so let's first remind us of what many people in this room know very well for having used these NPL, so non-patent literature. These are documents cited in patents, front page or in text, and they are referred there either by the applicant or by the examiner with the purpose of, mapping the patentability of the document. So it's not about knowledge sourcing per se, it's about establishing the sort of legal boundaries of the patent, or possibly of shedding some light on the unclear technological aspects that appear in the body of the text. But the basic purpose is the legal one. It's not for helping economists tracing knowledge across institutions or whatever. So there is of course a sort of good argument for using them this way, and as a consequence there is a long tradition among economists for using NPL. I mentioned here Narin, Ben Jones did it, Reinhold of course more recently, and so on. So the advantages of NPL is that, well, at least for the ones that are put in the patent by the examiner, they follow certain rules. And they are attributed with some human discretion. So human expertise comes there. It's normally not automatic. So you would expect some intelligence in the selection of these NPL. But the limitations of MPL, in a way, are the mirror image of these advantages. There are limitations in human beings as well, either cognitive limitations or could be biases. On the one hand, also a second aspect is that in view of the use of citations for the legal purposes, when examiners will try to find the documents that are the most relevant legally. So if they find one document that kills a claim in a patent, they won't be looking for a second one. Possibly the other one would be the real source, but the examiner does not care. He found a way to kill this claim. Also, examiners, for good reasons, prefer to cite patents than NPL, because legally speaking, a patent is a more clear object than a NPL. And if you go in front of a court, in front of a judge, and so on, a patent is easier to oppose to another patent than a NPL. And of course, as we will see, there are many biases there, notably biases by the applicant, and that are a source of problems when we use them. Okay, now let's move to NLP. So as I mentioned before, these NLP that I will be talking about are essentially vectors that are compiled by neural networks. Now it is transformer, the name of the sort of most fashionable and the most efficient technique. Transformer are a special architecture of neural networks. What they do, you input the text in the machine, and the machine, which is a multi-layer neural network, will issue a vector at the end, a high-dimensional vector. It's not three dimensions. It can be 700-800 dimensions for the one that we are working with. So God knows what can be happening in a 700 or 500 dimensions universe. It's difficult to figure out, which is one of the problems, actually, with this technique. So there are very few. Actually, I found only one example of a very recent paper published 2-3 weeks ago by the NBR using this technique for investigating the connection between science and technology. It's by Wes Cohen and others, co-authors. In this field, we see that technological developments are going on very rapidly, which is a good thing. There is progress, real progress there, but which makes also life difficult for researchers. You start your research with one technique, and you discover that 3 months later that it is outdated, there is a much better one on the market, and you have to restart all your work. But we should be happy about that, certainly. Advantages. Well, I mean, accessing the text is a sort of dream for all of us. We want to understand what the content of inventions. We want to trace connections between ideas and so on. So we need to have some understanding of the ideas. Before that, we were using only metadata. And metadata, as the name indicates, are not the real data. This is the real data. So it's really an advantage. A second one is that when you compile things this way, you do not directly depend on human discretion. It's not the strategy of the applicant or the examiner and so on. It is in the text, it is in the idea, and there is the same procedure which is applied to all your documents. Limitations. So, well, capturing the text is capturing the meaning is at the moment more an art than a science, probably in many respects. The very notion of a meaning, there are certainly philosophers in this house who could tell you during hours and hours that meaning depends on the person you are talking to. You present the same text to two persons or to two machines. They might not see the same meaning there, but there is only one meaning that is decided by the machine. Text does not necessarily convey all meanings. First, because text can be used to hide meaning in certain cases, we know that. There is a change in vocabulary over time, possible change. There are also graphs, images in that convey ideas, and at the moment machines are not comfortable processing that, and actually the one that we use cannot do it. There is a lack of transparency, sorry, or explainability. You get a sort of a decision, like if you present that to an expert who will say, put green light or red light, but you don't know exactly why the machine decided this way. Again, 700 dimensions, it's a lot, and it's difficult to master. And just to give you an example of the possible divergence between these two sorts of data sources, here you have a patent at the top and publications at the bottom. They are the title and abstract, very close semantically, and the colors indicate to what, because it is very specific terms that feature in the two, and the machine will overweight specific terms in its vectorization. And you see that they are very close, 0.9966. Still, there is no citation, although the time frame would allow that. We have other examples going the other direction and so on, but I won't give more. So what we did, going to the core of the work, we set up corpuses for three domains, very advanced domains, CRISPR, quantum cryptography, and CAR T cells, corpuses of publications and of patents using standard techniques with CPC classes, keywords, and the like. And we use the NPL coming from the Reliance on Science, Marx and Foggy database. And we also constituted complementary non-corpuses with the cited publications, so cited by the core patents of each corpus, and the patents which are citing publications for this corpus. So this is to give you an idea of the size of the corpuses. In view of the time, I will accelerate a bit. Just to show you that we are dealing with it's frontier technologies. So it's very recent data, meaning that much of the data that we are working with are truncated. We won't observe all the citations, we won't observe all the patents and so on in this field. To show you the NPL, for the NPL, there is a high variability across domains. Comparing crypto, you see that the average number of citations in crypto patents, NPL citation, may be around 6 or 7. If you go to CRISPR, it's around 50. So already CRISPR might be closer to science than crypto quantum cryptography in certain ways, that could be argued. But still, you see there is really a disproportion across fields that already points to something going on that is not necessarily only the scientific closeness to science of semantic proximity. So what we did, as I mentioned, we used the title and abstract of each document, which is the standard approach nowadays, because it is not too long and it is sufficiently informative. Although we will see that that can be that can raise certain problems. And also we calculated the embeddings, and we calculated the cosine distance, the proximity between these vectors. Then we identify the nearest neighbors. So the patent, the publication that is the closest to a patent, the fifth publication closest to a patent, 20th and 100th. This is on one of the corpuses, but the others are not that different. It tells you that, the distance is it's very concentrated. You see, it's not between 0 and 1. This is really around 1.94 for the nearest neighbor. This is understandable because the transformer that we use has been trained on a variety of scientific and technical fields. So its ability to discriminate very relatively close documents, of course, is a bit less powerful. That said, looking at documents, we have no reason to think that it is distorting the relations. It's just a question that when we have small distances, which we should have in mind that it can still be, when you go to the text, quite different inventions. Okay, comparing NPL and NLP, it's very complex data, so we compare them using various approaches, but they all, happy thing, they all delivered a similar message, which is, just to show you here, we have a number of NPL and semantic proximity for patterns, for core patterns, non-core, but bottom line, there is a correlation that is significant, 0.2, 0.3. So it's significant, but we are quite far from one. And the question then is why? Where do these differences come from? We submitted three assumptions that I will look at the second and the third. And the first one refers to some randomness in the data. You have many possible documents that could be related, and for whatever reason, the examiner, the applicant, would pick one or the other. The two other ones point to certain sorts of either biases or either a sort of meaning of these indicators. So, first assumption is about strategic citations. Essentially, applicants, because we have data from the applicants here, they will flood the patent office with data. We have one patent with 1,200 NLP, NPL, sorry, in the CRISPR domain. So nobody will believe that the inventors read all this and whatever. So clearly it is something that is a bit uninformative and probably coming with a purpose. So what we did in order to check that, there are various ways of doing it. One way is to look at the average semantic similarity between a patent and its NPLs, controlling by the number of NPLs of a patent. And we see, as expected, and in conformity with this hypothesis of strategic behavior, that the semantic similarity declines with the number of NPLs. So the more NPL you have, the further they are from your patent. Second assumption is about the interpretation of this data. And this becomes interesting because it tells you that probably the two indicators might be interesting, but that reflect different types of connections between science and technology. Essentially, the NLP that we have calculated with abstract and title reflect a sort of, the domain, the type of story that the two documents are telling. It's viewed from afar, summarizing an entire paper, as you know, in a few sentences, requires that you go, you take some distance with the subject. So the patent and the document with similar summaries might be talking of the same subject, but we can't tell much more. Whereas citations refer to very specific ideas that are common between the two documents. And these ideas, you might not find them necessarily in the title and abstract. In order to check this idea, we did embeddings at a more granular level, at the level of claims for the patent, at the level of the full text for the publications. Full text was not available for all publications and so on. And what we got is that this distance at a granular level is a much better predictor of the existence of a citation link than the connection at the semantic proximity at an aggregate level. So H3 is confirmed, and I'm here arriving at the last slide. Taking a few, it's not really operational conclusions. This work is ongoing. That's why also I'm expecting many suggestions from you. And it's certainly too early to draw operational conclusions. But it points in certain directions for developing further work. First, so I said the two sources of data are not necessarily fully substitute, they can be complements, indicating different sorts of connections between science and technology. When you train language models for predicting citations, probably it's more precision will come from training them at a more granular granular level. And and the citations could be used for correcting, semantic proximity could be used for correcting citations or complementing citations, notably when you don't have NLPs, which or NPLs, which happens in many cases, or when you have too many NPLs, which also, as we saw in other cases. So there should be ways of sort of combining these two sources to get to, less bias and less noisy indicators of the connections between science and technology. Thank you.
Exactly. That's what they have to say. You know, I mean, there are all these acronyms that are being thrown here, NPL, NLP. I thought that it was on purpose to confuse us. So please, non parlare linguaje. I mean, that's a... so it's a lot of it's a big pleasure to be in this conference, both because of the in honor of Zvi and because of the company and the paper. So it's great, and we're going to talk more about this evening. So I want to Dominique, you used this very nice quote from Zvi, and indeed this is another effort. This paper to light further candles, and contrary to what Bob Gordon seemed to imply, you know, darkness is infinite, but so is our ability to light candles, and ever bigger and more and brighter candles. So don't despair, you know, there's a lot of work out there. So I kind of was thinking to myself, what would Zvi say if he were to discuss this paper? And you know, Zvi was a very generous person in terms of his time, his support, the resources he poured on all of us. But he was not very prompt to praise. He wasn't. I mean, you know, whenever you know you will sweat it for 2 months working on a paper, you would come to him, give him the paper. He would go like this. He had this amazing ability to capture the essence. And he would say, you know, like Adam does it well. He would say, not bad. Keep going. That's it. And if you didn't have a lot of self-confidence, you crashed. I mean, so it was, the people that lasted as students of Zvi is a selection mechanism. To strengthen your self-confidence, because otherwise it doesn't work. So I need to, if I were to follow the step of speed, I won't compliment this paper. You know, I won't tell you this. You know, sweat it out. I mean, you know, go.
It's not bad.
It's not bad. You know, really, it's not bad. That's the truth. But you know, I'm not Zvi. So. So it's a very interesting paper, and you do what really Zvi expected, which is to bring to the table, this is not new data, but new techniques that allow to produce new data, and to essentially challenge the use of existing data, which is the citations, okay? So in that sense, it's perfectly in line with this great tradition. I will go straight into what constructive comments. Okay, so I don't want to follow in the precept one of who was it? Yeah. So don't bother neither with major comments nor with minor comments. You know, go for constructive comments. Okay. So first of all, and this is a more general comment. I mean, you talk about the influence or the impact of science on technology, but why is it that we talk about the unidirectional line of causality or influence or whatever. And we know that this is, there is co-evolution, that it works both ways, that the science and technology evolve hand in hand. So I think, and this is a general comment, doesn't relate just to your paper, but instead of looking at that particular corner, let's look at these processes. And you know, there is essentially a process that evolves, you know, pushing forward the frontier, both in terms of science and technology, and essentially leaving a paper trail, okay? So, you know, patents, papers, this side, that, and so forth. So what I think is fascinating is to trace that process and see what sort of shocks affect it along the way, okay? So this is the way I want to think about it, okay? Not about kind of this unidirectional way looking at it. Now, before I go into the most substantive comment, which is the second one, I want to say something that has to do with any time you bring to the table a new indicator. The problem, the deeper problem is how to verify it. So how do I know? I mean, you know, when we were at first using citations, how the hell do we know that citations really imply importance of a patent? In what sense? It sounds intuitive, but that's not enough. And that's a huge problem, because if you had to begin with the measure of the value of patents, you wouldn't need the citations to, okay? So it's a chicken and egg problem, okay? So what we did a few things to try to verify. I won't go into that. You know, I did my work on CT scanners, so I had the measure of the welfare gains for hand, and then the patents. Then we did the university versus commercial patents. With Brownie, we did the market value of films. You try time and again to verify, okay? And then you get a sense that, okay, you know, I'm gaining something here, but you're not entirely sure, as we were saying about Zvi. You know, you're never quite sure of that. Now you bring this semantic similarity. So what is it telling us? So the first thing you do, which is really intuitively very good to do, is to say, okay, let's see how much it corresponds to the one that we know already, which is the citation, but we don't know exactly what citations mean, because you said yourself, you know, there are all these limitations to the citation. So if there is a correlation, I mean, what do I infer from that? So you see, I mean, we're in a bind that it's not you. I mean, it's the nature of the beast, okay? So more generally, we should keep looking for deeper ways of assessing what is the meaning of these indicators. So you know, how to verify it in a small way, so afterwards you can go a big way and scale it up, okay? That's kind of the fundamental issue that we are time and again running against. Now, what I'm going to suggest to you is the following, okay? So you have done it. I mean, so take a field, okay? Say CRISP, okay? How you define it is tricky. But, you know, we talked about this morning about the technological trajectories, about patent fields and so forth. You know, it's an issue that, but suppose, okay, we have a good way to define it, okay? Take a time frame. Then take all the patents in that field, okay, in that time frame. And then take all the scientific publications in that field, in that time frame. And then take all the pairs, okay, of patents and publications, regardless of, you know, just all the pairs, all the combinatorical of that, okay? And also all the pairs of patents and all the pairs of publications. So three types, yeah. I mean, yeah. So, all the, sorry, don't have any idea. Take all the pairs, okay? And then for each pair, you can look at whether they cite each other, either way, okay? What is the semantic similarity using your measure of semantic similarity? What's the time lag between the two, okay? The coincidence of authors, you know, are these the same or not? And the coincidence of location. So you have five, okay, possible indicators of in every pair. Okay? So the idea will be to take these five, okay, and try to compose out of them some overall index of the relatedness between all these pairs, not causality, but the relatedness, okay? Now, how do you construct that index? That's very tough because, again, you need something to verify it against, but, you know, there are various ways of doing it. I don't remember whether I have another. Oh, yeah, I did, okay. And then you can see how they evolve over time. I mean, what's the direction in time? Try to validate it with surveys and can do the same for every path. So what I'm saying is that you have opened up here a line of research that I think is fascinating. It has a great deal of potential, okay? And it requires now that you have done it, okay, to really look it in a deeper sense also in terms of all these possibilities. I had some minor comments on how you train the transformer, whatever. For some reason, the transformer reminds me of the Terminator with Schwarzenegger. But anyway, it's a big issue. I mean, and it's related to the issue of verification. But you know, this is for a private conversation. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So yeah, feel free to respond to the discussion, and when you're ready, we can open it up to Q&A.
Very, very quickly. I remember, Emmanuel, when we first met, it was in Stanford a number of months ago, let's say, and when you were compiling this citation data, I remember, on a 486, and you had this CD-ROM that were new technology at the time, and the computer was running for weeks and weeks. So you should imagine a similar thing nowadays with the semantic analysis. It's a really big machines. Thank you for your suggestion. Very, very good. We should do deeper and more ambitious work for that. I'm sure that you could also suggest a funder for this work, and we'll talk of that.
Retrouvez tous les contenus du Collège de France sur www.college-de-france.fr.